Chapter 20. Honest, she broke out suddenly. Not quite honest, he repeated, caught in a fresh wave of wonder. I mean, in seeming not to trust you. It's come over me again as we talked that, a tart, I've always known I could. Dot, her color rose in a bright wave, and her eyes clung to his for a swift instant of reminder and appeal. For the same space of time the past surged up in him confusedly, then a veil dropped between them. Here's Effie now, she exclaimed. He turned and saw the little girl trotting back to them, her hand in Owen Leaf's. Even through the stir of his subsiding excitement, Darrow was at once aware of the change effected by the young man's approach. For a moment Sophie Viner's cheeks burned redder, then they faded to the paleness of white petals. She lost, however, nothing of the bright bravery which it was her way to turn on the unexpected. Perhaps no one less familiar with her face than Darrow would have discerned the tension of the smile she transferred from himself to Owen Leaf, or have remarked that her eyes had hardened from misty gray to a shining darkness. But her observer was less struck by this than by the corresponding change in Owen Leaf. The latter, when he came in sight, had been laughing and talking unconcernedly with Effie, but as his eye fell on Miss Viner his expression altered as suddenly as hers. The change, for Darrow, was less definable, but, perhaps for that reason, it struck him as more sharply significant. Only just what did it signify? Owen, like Sophie Viner, had the kind of face which seems less the stage on which emotions move than the very stuff they work in. In moments of excitement his odd irregular features seemed to grow fluid, to unmake and remake themselves like the shadows of clouds on a stream. Darrow, through the rapid flight of the shadows, could not seize on any specific indication of feeling. He merely perceived that the young man was unaccountably surprised at finding him with Miss Viner, and that the extent of his surprise might cover all manner of implications. Darrow's first idea was that Owen, if he suspected that the conversation was not the result of an accidental encounter, might wonder at his stepmother's suitor being engaged, at such an hour, in private talk with her little girl's governess. The thought was so disturbing that, as the three turned back to the house, he was on the point of saying to Owen Colin, I came out to look for your mother. But, in the contingency he feared, even so simple a phrase might seem like an awkward attempt at explanation, and he walked on in silence at Miss Viner's side. Presently he was struck by the fact that Owen Leaf and the girl were silent also, and this gave a new turn to his thoughts. Silence may be as variously shaded as speech, and that which enfolded Darrow and his two companions seemed to his watchful perceptions to be quivering with cross threads of communication. At first he was aware only of those that centered in his own troubled consciousness. Then it occurred to him that an equal activity of intercourse was going on outside of it. Something was in fact passing mutely and rapidly between young Leaf and Sophie Viner, but what it was, and whither it tended, Darrow, when they reached the house, was but just beginning to divine. XVIII, Anna Leaf, from the terrace, watched the return of the little group. She looked down on them, as they advanced across the garden, from the serene height of her unassailable happiness. There they were, coming toward her in the mild morning light, her child, her stepson, her promised husband. The three beings who filled her life. She smiled a little at the happy picture they presented, Effie's gambols encircling it in the moving frame within which the two men came slowly forward in the silence of friendly understanding. It seemed part of the deep intimacy of the scene that they should not be talking to each other, and it did not till afterward strike her as odd that neither of them apparently felt it necessary to address a word to Sophie Viner. Anna herself, at the moment, was floating in the mid-current of felicity, on a tide so bright and buoyant that she seemed to be one with its warm waves. The first rush of bliss had stunned and dazzled her, but now that, each morning, she woke to the calm certainty of its recurrence, she was growing used to the sense of security it gave. I feel as if I could trust my happiness to carry me, as if it had grown out of me like wings. So she phrased it to Darrow, as, later in the morning, they paced the garden paths together. His answering look gave her the same assurance of safety. The evening before he had seemed preoccupied, and the shadow of his mood had faintly encroached on the great golden orb of their blessedness. But now it was uneclipsed again, and hung above them high and bright as the sun at noon. Upstairs in her sitting room, that afternoon, she was thinking of these things. The morning mists had turned to rain, compelling the postponement of an excursion in which the whole party were to have joined. Effie, with her governess, had been dispatched in the motor to do some shopping at Franchuel, and Anna had promised Darrow to join him, later in the afternoon, for a quick walk in the rain. He had gone to his room after luncheon, to get some belated letters off his conscience, and when he had left her as he had continued to sit in the same place, her hands crossed on her knees, her head slightly bent, in an attitude of brooding retrospection. As she looked back at her past life, it seemed to her to have consisted of one ceaseless effort to pack into each hour enough to fill out its slack folds. But now each moment was like a miser's back stretched to bursting with pure gold. She was roused by the sound of Owen's step in the gallery outside her room. It paused at her door, and in answer to his knock she called out, "Omen." As the door closed behind him, she was struck by his look of pale excitement, and an impulse of compunction made her say, "You've come to ask me why I haven't spoken to your grandmother." He sent about him a glance vaguely reminding her of the strange look with which Sophie Viner had swept the room the night before. Then his brilliant eyes came back to her. "I've spoken to her myself," he said. Anna started up, incredulous. "You've spoken to her? When?" "Just now. I left her to come here." Anna's first feeling was one of annoyance. There was really something comically incongruous in this boyish surrender to impulse on the part of a young man so eager to assume the responsibilities of life. She looked at him with a faintly veiled amusement. "You asked me to help you and I promised you I would. It was hardly worthwhile to work out such an elaborate plan of action if you intended to take the matter out of my hands without telling me." "Oh, don't take that tone with me," he broke out, almost angrily. "That tone? What tone?" She stared at his quivering face. "I might," she pursued, still half laughing, "more properly make that request of you." Owen reddened and his vehemence suddenly subsided. "I meant that I had to speak, that's all. You don't give me a chance to explain." Dot, she looked at him gently, wondering a little at her own impatience. "Owen, don't I always want to give you every chance? It's because I do that I wanted to talk to your grandmother first, that I was waiting and watching for the right moment." Dot, the right moment? "So was one. That's why I've spoken." His voice rose again, and took the sharp edge it had in moments of high pressure. His stepmother turned away, and seated herself in her sofa corner. "H, my dear, it's not a privilege to quarrel over. You've taken a load off my shoulders. Sit down and tell me all about it." He stood before her, irresolute. "Can't sit down," he said. "Walk about, then. Only tell me. I'm impatient." His immediate response was to throw himself into the armchair at her side, where he lounged for a moment without speaking, his legs stretched out, his arms locked behind his thrown back head. Anna, her eyes on his face, waited quietly for him to speak. "Well, of course it was just what one expected." "She takes it so badly, you mean?" All the heavy batteries were brought up. "My father, giver, Monsieur de Chantel, the throne and the altar. Even my poor mother was dragged out of oblivion and armed with imaginary protests." Anna sighed out her sympathy. "El, you were prepared for all that?" "I thought I was, till I began to hear her say it. Then it sounded so incredibly silly that I told her so." "Oh, Owen, Owen." "Yes. I know. I was a fool, but I couldn't help it." "And you've mortally offended her, I suppose?" That's exactly what I wanted to prevent. She laid a hand on his shoulder. You tiresome boy, not to wait and let me speak for you. He moved slightly away, so that her hand slipped from its place. You don't understand, he said, frowning. I don't see how I can, till you explain. If you thought the time had come to tell your grandmother, why not have asked me to do it? I had my reasons for waiting, but if you'd told me to speak I should have done so, naturally. He evaded her appeal by a sudden turn. What were your reasons for waiting? Anna did not immediately answer. Her stepson's eyes were on her face, and under his gaze she felt a faint disquietude. I was feeling my way. I wanted to be absolutely sure. Absolutely sure of what? She delayed again for a just perceptible instant. W.Y., simply of our side of the case. But you told me you were, the other day, when we talked it over before they came back from Ouchie. Oh, my dear, if you think that, in such a complicated matter, every day, every hour, doesn't more or less modify one's surest sureness. That's just what I'm driving at. I want to know what has modified yours. She made a slight gesture of impatience. What does it matter, now the thing's done? I don't know that I could give any clear reason. He got to his feet, and stood looking down on her with a tormented brow. But it's absolutely necessary that you should. At his tone her impatience flared up. It's not necessary that I should give you any explanation whatever, since you've taken the matter out of my hands. All I can say is that I was trying to help you. That no other thought ever entered my mind. She paused a moment, and then added, if you doubted it, you were right to do what you've done. Oh, I never doubted you, he retorted, with a fugitive stress on the pronoun. His face had cleared to its old look of trust. Aren't be offended, if I've seemed to, he went on. Can't quite explain myself either, it's all a kind of tangle, isn't it? That's why I thought I'd better speak at once. Or rather why I didn't think at all, but just suddenly blurted the thing out. Anna gave him back his look of conciliation. The how and why don't much matter now. The point is how to deal with your grandmother. You've not told me what she means to do. Oh, she means to send for Adelaide Painter. The name drew a faint note of mirth from him, and relaxed both their faces to a smile. Perhaps, Anna added, it's really the best thing for us all. Owen shrugged his shoulders. "'Tis too preposterous and humiliating. Dragging that woman into our secrets, this could hardly be a secret much longer. He had moved to the hearth, where he stood pushing about the small ornaments on the mantel shelf, but at her answer he turned back to her. You haven't, of course, spoken of it to anyone? No. But I intend to now. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.